Let's ride, let's ride, let's ride. All right, welcome back to the Let's Ride podcast. This is Pete Coyon. Today, I am not joined by my esteemed colleague, Matt Bocklet. We have Terry Foyes. I don't know if that's an upgrade or a promotion, but we'll let Matt speak on that when he gets back on next week. But I'm excited about this episode. Terry and I are going to talk a little bit about a few things here first. But how are you feeling about your debut here, Terry?
Nervous, excited. All the things. I think, Matt brings a lot in the hairline department that I lack. He brings a lot in the ground ball department that I can only dream to attain. He went to more colleges than I did. So, yeah, no, I think I got big shoes to fill.
Well, good thing it's just audio, no video, and we're not doing ground ball. So I think you're in good shape. We're going to quickly get right to it here. I want to talk to you about, first off, your top 20 that you're posting is phenomenal, and it's very detailed. And because it's Monday morning, it takes me a couple different sessions of getting through that, but it's very informative and I'm enjoying it. And I think the feedback that I've gotten from people that I've talked to, they're really enjoying it too. So well done there. I do want to address the St. Joe's program coming out on Twitter.
Right for the neck.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so how are you feeling about that? And how are you in turn feeling about that program and what they've done to this point and what you expect from them the rest of the season?
Well, I think that I'm feeling scared for you because they're going to come after you now, because it's not St. Joe's, it's St. Joseph's, which is what I was informed on Twitter.
They've been coming after me for a year. I mean, they're my arch nemesis. They're going against my statesman this weekend. So I have no
problem. How many times have you seen them in the NEC tournament?
Oh man. I think almost every year it was them or Brian at some point.
Yeah. But,
so what I wanted to talk about in terms of St. Joe's is they're a team, and you wrote this in your column, that have not gotten over that hump and won the NEC and gone to the playoffs, but they were perennially winning the regular season title. And I don't know if you can quote me on this, but I don't think an NEC team that has won the regular season has won the conference playoffs over the course of the last 8 years, maybe Brian's done it once, but it was at St. Joe's almost every year. And we won it 1 year, Bryant won it a couple years, and then it's Bennett Bryant and they've lost. So I'm just, tell me what you think about this team and what they've done this year.
So two separate questions. So to the first point, the fact that no team has won the NEC regular season and then won the tournament is like the perfect conversation to have right now as we go through this transition from the early part of the season into the middle part of the season, or, set ourselves up for conference play. The notion that this is the pivotal and most important time of the year is incorrect. This is the second most important time of the year. The most important time of the year is 4 or 5 weeks from now. This is an opportunity to prepare yourself to be in a position to play important games 4 to 5 weeks from now. And it's a very different thing. But to the point specifically about St. Joseph's, the Hawks up on the hill, I mean, when you have the best faceoff guy in college lacrosse, like, all bets are off. Everything about the way that you play is completely different from the way that everybody else plays. And they are averaging almost 13 more possessions per game than their opponent, which means that they can allow goals on 50% of the possessions against them and score on 34% of the possessions that they have, and they're going to win. I mean, it's just an incredible imbalance to the field, and it's a testament to exactly how good Zach Cole is. And it's not to sell short all the rest of their teams. They're not winning every game by one goal, and they're 7-2. They're a deserving team in my top 20, but their wins, their most substantial wins over Penn State and over Towson, don't look as good now as they did when they won. And so that's where, when I examine the body of work and the product on the field, which are the two components that go into making these decisions, their body of work isn't as impressive. So, it puts me in a position where I have to say, I'm not going to punish them for not losing, right? They beat Wagner 12-6. That's not a reason to fall out of the top 20. But at the same time, when I look at some of the teams that are nipping at their heels, like this week, for instance, Brown, who has a win over Villanova, well, I don't know. Puts me in a tough spot relative to exactly how good is St. Joe's. St. Joseph's, excuse me.
Again, A repeat offender. No, so I think this is a team that's fascinating. I think any team that's in the NEC that's in the top 20 is doing some really good things. St. Joe's traditionally has been a very well coached, very well organized team. I like their staff. St. Joseph's. I like their staff. I like their personnel, specifically a kid from, you know, now I'm in Charlotte, and the kid, Matt Bomer, I think that's how you say his name.
Yeah, that's right.
I have always loved his game. And I've heard since being down here what a workhorse he is in terms of the amount of work he puts into his personal game, his skill development. I think when you have a guy like that, and I know that they've had guys like that in the past, including Mike Restivo, who's on their staff. I think Scott Meehan's a very good young offensive coordinator. And I think the world of Taylor Ray, I think he's a phenomenal coach who hasn't got over that hump for whatever reason. And so I'm hopeful, aside from them playing when they play Hobart, that this team can do some really good things. I know that may sound contradictory, but I believe this team is deserving of the top 20. Their faceoff guy is their faceoff guy. They recruited him. They've developed him. He's doing a phenomenal job. I'm not sure you can hold that against them. I do think when they run into, and I know you're not, but I think when you run into a team with a superior or a top tier faceoff guy, you're going to see you potentially see the deficiencies that you're talking about. And that's part of it. They're playing a really good FOGO this weekend in Adam Shea at Hobart. And I think that'll be a good one to watch. And so we may see a pretty good indication of how successful they are in terms of efficiency on both sides of the ball when they run into a good faceoff guy. But I think they're deserving of the top 20, and they're in yours. And so I don't think there's any disrespect there. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how this NEC shakes out the rest of the year. In the interest of time, I want to talk about a Richmond team, to your point, teams that are doing really good things and
lurking in the shadows.
Yeah. I think Richmond is lurking in the shadows. I think Coach Schmadi at Richmond and Paul Richards and Hogan. And I think that staff is a very good one. And I think that they don't love to talk about their program and what they're doing and what they're not doing. They kind of let their results speak for themselves. They're going against two programs that are marketing machines, and you hear a lot about, and I've had some big wins in Jacksonville and High Point, but this SoCon conference is going to be a phenomenal race down the stretch. And I think Richmond is positioned looking at their peers to really respond, and kind of, you know, I think that coaching staff has all the ammo they need to say, hey, listen, we're not being talked about. We're not the favorites in our conference, and this predominantly has been our conference. So what's your take on them?
I've been impressed and fascinated by this program for almost a decade. I mean, it dates back. I was covering the Hawaii lacrosse tournament the morning that Dan got named the head coach, but I was 6 hours behind. So, you know, I woke up to the news and I was so disappointed because I think I was in a position to break it the night before. And for whatever reason, I failed to pull the trigger. But in any case, you know, he was coming off of obviously an incredible run at Loyola winning a national championship. And so, you know, the combination of the circumstances around which the program came into fruition, and then hiring Dan, and then quickly establishing themselves as an NCAA tournament competitor. You know, it crossed my mind when I was looking back at so we have a second play-in game in the NCAA tournament that returned this year because there's a 10th AQ for the first time since 2016. And so there were two AQs in 2014, 15, and 16. And in one of those games, and I think it was the first one in 2014, Richmond actually went out to Air Force and played, you know, a Wednesday night game in Colorado Springs. It was either the first or second year of the program's existence. And so from that point to now, you know, I've been to a couple of their practices. Obviously, I've seen them play a ton. When I think about contrasting Richmond and High Point relative to Jacksonville, you know, there's an extent to which I'm kind of like, you look at their body of work to this point, and really there's two things that separate them. The first is that Jacksonville beat Duke, and Richmond and High Point, which have both done that in their history, didn't. And then Richmond and High Point played three, or in High Point's case, three and Maryland ACC teams, whereas Jacksonville played one. And they obviously went to Denver and got a win over the Pioneers. So this is not to discredit their resume. It's just to say that 5-4 or whatever it is that those two teams are, and certainly Richmond has a big test with Virginia coming up this weekend, they're not necessarily representative of the team's strengths. So when you compound that with what the history of this SoCon has been, you kind of come out and say, all right, by the rankings, Jacksonville will be the favorite heading into the SoCon regular season and the SoCon tournament. But I think, I don't know, I would caution against making wagers in that direction is the way that I would frame it. And then, you know, specifically with the product that they're putting on the field, like, you know, I'll admit that I've only seen essentially two games, the Carolina and the Georgetown game from Richmond this year. I know that, you know, they've always been a team who has started from their ride. And I think that that's interesting from the standpoint of creating an on-field identity. And then over the last 3 years, you know, they've been a team that I think really started and spoke off of Ryan Lansbury. Ryan Lansbury is a really unique player as it relates to being a initiator offensively. And I remember I did a film study about him last year, and it was shortly on the heels of their game against Duke. And I talked to Ron Caputo about exactly what makes him special. And he talked about the strength of his wrists and his ability to throw these passes from angles and release points that you don't see otherwise. And so as a result, it's very hard to prepare for. It's kind of like, you know, preparing for Lamar Jackson, which I know as a Steelers fan, you must love to hear. Do you put a defensive back in the, you know, quarterback position on scout team and try to prepare for that? Like,
do your best.
Yeah, it's a tough call. So, you know, I think from that standpoint, that's what makes conference play so beautiful is that, you know, how many times have these Jacksonville defenders had to defend Ryan Lansbury and Asher Nolte? There are no secrets the way that there sometimes are in non-conference play when you're playing somebody that you hadn't played in prior years. So, you know, I'm excited to potentially get eyes on Richmond, Virginia this weekend, and then certainly Jacksonville, Richmond the following week to just get a better sense of who they are right now and where they're at.
Well, you can tell you've spent a lot more time than me looking at the overall landscape over the last 10, whatever, 15 years. That was very
detailed. Were you responsible for one team? Yeah. During the last 10 or 15 years as opposed to 75?
Well, right.
It's kind of the nature of our job.
I'm enjoying your answer. And I think what's great about that conference is that, and it's typically, and I would say if you ranked all the conferences, the second half of those conferences, you can look to one favorite typically, or maybe two. And in that conference, I don't think it's the case. And I think with the amount that those two in Jacksonville and I'm drawing a blank, Jacksonville and High Point are talked about, you're not hearing about Richmond. So I don't think it's proportional or proportionate to the way that conference race will play out. And it's going to be a fun conference to watch. But I'm excited for this interview. We have David Shriver and Mike Phipps from Georgetown, two guys that you don't hear a lot from and guys that are at the forefront of creating a program that is consistently, you know, winning the Big East and going to the tournament. And I think they're ready to break through. So I'm interested to get into this and we will intro these guys in just a second.
All right. So we welcome in Georgetown assistant coaches, Mike Phipps and David Shriver, whose Hoya program has become one of the most prominent in certainly the Big East, if not of all of college lacrosse, rising to number three in the most recent Inside Lacrosse media poll. Mike, is it fair to call you? Well, it's actually true for both of you. You guys are Maryland lacrosse blue bloods. Mike, a Severn School alum who went on to play for the Terps. He then became a volunteer at the University of Maryland, moved on to High Point, where he was an assistant for the Panthers, then spent time at the Naval Academy before arriving in the swamp to be the offensive coordinator of the Georgetown Hoyas. David Shriver, son of legendary boys Latin coach Bob Shriver, what himself a BL grad, did a PG year at the Salisbury School, became a captain at Georgetown. You're now coaching at your alma mater. He spent 6 seasons at Penn State University as volunteer and director of lacrosse operations, then moving on to Georgetown. And we've got a lot to talk about when it comes to the two of you. So thank you very much for joining us. And I guess, Pete, I apologize to step on you, but before we get into it, Mike and David, do you guys mind describing your roles within the staff?
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, as you said, I'm coaching the offense, but Shrives helps me a bunch, just kind of as the guy that, you know, with Coach Warren and Coach Rowlett doing the defense, it's kind of myself and Shrives just trying to figure out the offense. And, you know, he's there to kind of help me – with anything I need. So which is awesome. Just with what he knows. And he'll probably tell you he coaches our goalies and runs the box along with helping me with the offense.
Yeah, no, that's Mike hit the nail on the head there with all of that. Obviously, Mike did not talk about his role as our recruiting coordinator, so he handles all that for us, which is extremely helpful. It's certainly for me, because Terry mentioned earlier, I was coming kind of from being a volunteer director of operations when I got back to Georgetown. So having Mike on board to kind of lead all of our recruiting efforts certainly helped me immensely. I mean, absolutely immensely. And certainly getting us organized as a staff as well, because we all love Coach Warren. And I think Coach Warren would be the first to admit he's not the most organized human being. So Mike's been the one that's gotten us kind of organized on the recruiting front. So
well, there's a lot there, and we're going to kind of iron out some of those wrinkles as we go through the podcast. But I know, Shrives, you've been responsible for some phenomenal goalies and McElroy and Morocco, who was a thorn in my side for quite a while. And I think he's one of the most underrated goalies in the game. So we're going to ask you quite a bit about the way you developed your goalies, and Mike, we're getting into the offensive stuff, and David, you being an alum there, I think that there's just a ton to dig into, but I want to start with two questions that Mr. Kip Turner actually presented to me when I texted him. So the first one is I think it's a great one with Terry being a part of the podcast too, because it's got a little Baltimore a flavor to it. But Shriver and Mike, you guys, first off, why does everyone from outside of that region think that Baltimore and Annapolis are kind of packaged together, and how much cooler is Annapolis than Baltimore? And I'm going to let Terry follow up on that and provide a rebuttal, if he has any, to whatever your answer is.
They're not packaged together at all. They're two separate places. Anne Arundel County is totally different than Baltimore. I am Anne Arundel County. Shrives is Baltimore. We are very different.
And I think that's fair. And listen, I actually, you know, full disclosure, I live down here now in Anne Arundel County. I live in Annapolis. You know, my wife works at Navy. So we live down here in Annapolis, live right up the street from Mike. So, and he's right. They are definitely two separate areas. You know, obviously growing up in Baltimore, I still give the edge to Baltimore, but I will say I do love living in Annapolis. I really do.
He's converted. It's what happens to everybody. They move to Annapolis and they never want to leave.
Yeah, it's true. It's a great place. Listen, I'll say it's a great place. I can't bash Baltimore, but it's a great place.
The greatest.
I'll give my opinion, but first I want Terry to go because he's a Baltimore guy.
So I'm a Cleveland guy, just to be clear.
You're a Baltimore guy.
I've lived in Baltimore for like, I don't know, 19 years at this point. I think Annapolis is the most overrated place in the world. It has incredibly brutal traffic. Like getting in and out of there is worse than getting in and out of Washington, D.C. Like,
no. That's crazy talk.
Yes, we do it every day. No way. But
you know. Carpool. Shrives and I carpool almost every day at work. It's not that bad.
No, it's not.
You're on the water. I get it. That's fantastic. That's not, I mean, yeah, like, I don't know. I don't have time. I can't.
You lost. For this. You lost this argument. And Shriver, you did as well. Annapolis is an unbelievable town.
Kind of sounds
town.
Like you came in with a preconceived notion here, Pete.
What's that?
Said it kind of sounds like you came with a preconceived notion. Actually, I think that you and I had a night at Plusser's after a Bayhawks game at one point.
Okay, well, there it goes. Another reason to love Annapolis and put it above Baltimore. I got to move. I've spent a good amount of time in both, and I would go 100% Annapolis is my favorite. But, yeah, it's on the water. You can't really downplay that. It's a pretty phenomenal aspect of the town of Annapolis. And I just love walking through it and not having to worry about anything, which is quite the opposite in Baltimore. But anyway, we'll move on, fellas. I do. So, Mike, Kip wanted me to ask you, too, about your experience shooting on him and why you struggle so much to score on him when it's so easy for you on other goalies.
He actually gave me a pointer, which was hilarious. But when I was a junior in college and he was at Virginia, I had green mesh. And he said every time I shot, he could track my shot better because my mesh was green. So he really didn't have anything to do with it. It was because my mesh was green. So I'm not giving him any credit. He said he could track the ball a lot better. So I started playing with a white mesh and I started scoring on him more.
Is that like the hard shells thing? Is that was that the motivation behind the green mesh?
I don't really know. Joe Sanowski he strung green mesh for everybody, and then Kip started saving everybody's shots, so we just went to white mesh and things changed. So I'm not giving Kip any credit.
Well, we won't give him an opportunity to rebuttal here. He's already been on the pod, but I know you guys are close. And did you guys go to high school together? Is that?
We did. Yeah, we went to Severn together, and we were in each other's wedding. So yeah, we're really close. He's a good friend, good dude.
Yeah, he's awesome. Terry, let's dig into the Coach Warren discussion a little bit.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's nothing easier or better than asking people about their boss. So I'm sure that that's going to be super comfortable. But one of the things that I'm really interested in your guys' perspective on is, you know, and I've talked to Coach Warren about this at length multiple times, just the nature of being yourself in the job of being a coach and how hard it is, and particularly how easy it is to give in to the temptation of being somebody that you think you're supposed to be. And I really feel like, and I think he's acknowledged this, at the early part of his tenure at Georgetown, he struggled with that. And then over the last 5-6 years, coinciding, maybe coincidental, maybe causal, with this run of success that the program has experienced, he's re-embraced aspects of his persona, I think publicly and probably also within the team, that were maybe a little bit more familiar to, say, the 2012 Maryland National Championship run with the mosh pit and everything else on the sideline. And I'm just interested in your perspective on that. But then I'm also interested in, you know, for you, Mike Phipps and David Shriver, how hard is it for you guys to be yourselves in your role? So, Mike, I'll let you go first.
I think you hit the nail on the head, Terry. He is that's all I've ever known from him, because when Shrives and I came on board, he was himself, which was great. And he's the first guy to make fun of himself, like to the team, to us. And, you know, the two things that I take away from working for him are, number one, you have to have fun. And he's one of the most fun guys there is. And, you know, he'll joke around. He's probably a little bit more immature than a lot of the guys we have on our team, which is him being himself. Like, you have to be that way. It rubs off on our guys, makes fun of himself. But two, you know, he can be serious too. Like he's more serious sometimes than you think. And then when he is, it almost has a better effect on the guys because they know that it's where it's coming from. And, you know, that's all I've ever known with him. And it makes it easy for us to be ourselves because he's himself and he's joking around in the office all day long. And that makes it fun to go to work every day. And it's, you know, it doesn't feel like a job, so to speak. And you can kind of let your guard down and don't worry about things so much. Cause at the end of the day, you know, we have great jobs and coaching these kids that we love, that why wouldn't you be anything other than yourself? And once they can see that and they pick up on that, you know, it has a lasting effect on them just developing a relationship a little bit deeper with him than, you know, just seeing a guy that you talk to every day of practice. It's more than that. It's outside of that. It's coming up to the office, shooting the breeze a little bit and getting to know him and making fun of him for liking the Jets and that sort of thing. And, you know, I think that has a lot to do with the success that we've had the last couple of years. And Shrives, I don't know if that makes sense or anything.
No, definitely. I think Mike hit everything kind of on the head with Coach. I mean, Coach he is certainly himself. There's no question about it. I mean, he, like Mike said, he makes fun of himself as much as anybody probably in this world. But, you know, coinciding with that, he makes us really feel like, yourself. Like, sometimes you go into a job and you think you have to be somebody that you're not. And you see it, I think, with a lot of coaches, you know, not just in our sport and all sports, but I think Coach has found a niche where he's been able to act like himself, but he also helps us feel comfortable being ourselves as well, being the way that we want to be. He gives us a lot of responsibility. He asks us for our input and stuff. And again, you talk to other people and you don't hear some of those things. And I think it's something that I certainly appreciate a lot. I mean, he took a chance on me. You know, I'd been working at Penn State, a couple years as a volunteer coach, 4 years as director of operations. I hadn't coached really at all for 4 years, and he gave me a chance. And since day one, it's just said, you know, let me do my role and run with it and just be myself, which is something I certainly appreciate. And, you know, I think you see the way our team plays, you see the way our team competes. I think it's a direct reflection of who he is. I do. I think if you spend time around our team, spend time around our guys, they just are a reflection of him. They really are. And, you know, I certainly, you know, think he's just an unbelievable guy to work for. And like Mike said, we go into work every day and we love what we do. We really do, because we have a good group of guys to work with, but honestly, we have a great time as a staff, you know, being around each other every day. Sometimes it can be a little challenging to get work done just because we're having, you know, some funny conversations, things like that. But it's a lot of fun. It's really a lot of fun. So, and Terry, I certainly think you hit the nail on the head as well. I think Coach definitely has continued to evolve through his times as a head coach to realize that he's got to be himself. And that's coincided with our success, I think. So,
well, and especially at a place like Georgetown, where, you know, it's a world-class institution with, you know, a deep-rooted Catholicism, Catholic Jesuit identity, you know, where it's kind of where like power brokers' children go to school, right? So you can understand how there'd be a lot of external pressure to be a certain way. David, is there a particular example of something that you feel like you've been able to indulge yourself, right? Like, it's like, this is who I am, but maybe you would have felt a little bit less comfortable in a different environment?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a good question. I mean, you know, I think for me personally, from day one, Coach has kind of given me, you know, the freedom to, you know, get in front of our team on Mondays. Like, I run our Monday film sessions, which, you know, are after a game and coincide with team clips. Like, if you would have told me I was doing that, you know, 5-6 years ago when I was director of operations, Penn State, I'd be like, are you nuts? But, you know, that's just what Coach said from day one. You know what? You're an alum of our place. You know how we want to kind of compete and play. You want to, you know, see what we want to represent. You got it. Like, you got it. And literally from day one, he kind of has given me that role, you know, especially on Mondays, kind of just coming in, showing clips of, you know, either effort plays or, you know, simple things like transition, things like that. But he's kind of given me that role. And again, that's something that I just would have never envisioned for myself. I mean, you know, again, just in my role, I'm kind of, obviously Michael is the associate head coach. I'm kind of that next tier assistant. I basically just work with our goalies, help Mike out with the offense whenever I can. But for Coach to give me that, it's something that I couldn't have imagined kind of when I got hired, but that's just what Coach has kind of empowered me at least to do. And, you know, I know certainly Michael on the offensive side, just how much, you know, power Coach has given him as well. But that's just an example, one example. Hopefully that kind of answered your question.
No, I think it definitely answers the question, I think. But, you know, I would also add that, you know, the success that Coach Warren, you guys have had at Georgetown, they're taking on, they're a reflection of the head coach. I would argue that the success really started to happen because of the work that was put in prior, but also because of the two of you stepping into new roles and being a part of the Georgetown men's lacrosse program. So, you know, I would, you know, and I think I'm going to probably move forward here, Terry. I'm going to steal one of your questions because I think it just makes sense at this point. But the biggest difference for you guys, like when you guys were struggling as a program, and David, you've been there longer than Mike, correct?
No, we came in same year as okay. Coaches, obviously. I was the player there, but different. Yeah.
In your conversations with Coach Warren, what's the big difference in kind of the first few years and then leading into the success that you guys are now having as a program? I mean, schematically, it's obviously different. You're having success recruiting, but like, what has changed and what has allowed you guys to take this next step forward as a program and start to compete in the tournament and start to bring in big time recruits that hopefully will allow you to get to that Final Four and national championship conversation?
No, I appreciate you saying that. I do think that, you know, when Shrives and I came in, I don't want to speak for David, but for myself, like, I didn't even, it was like a blank slate with me. Like, when I got there, I didn't really care how it was the last couple of years or how they did. It was just, I'm going to show up and it's going to be fresh and see who the guys are. And what I noticed really quick was they were really good. And I think that it could have been a lot of different coaches that maybe were lucky enough to get hired from Coach Warren, and it could have parlayed into success anyway, because of the foundation that was previously laid the last couple of years. It was just like, the timing was good, and it was, you know, I thought they were talented, and you know, there was a lot of one goal losses the year before that, you know, if they had gone a different way, who knows, you know, what would have happened. And we were just fortunate enough to be on the other end of that next step. And, you know, I just think that it was going to happen regardless. And I think a lot of that was in the years where it was really, really difficult. And the senior class, that our first senior class when we got there, was just a group that had been through some bad years, and they were just going to not allow their senior year to be another bad year, regardless of who the coaches were, really. And I give them a lot of credit, and, you know, just developing relationships with them and just being ourselves. It just, one year led to the next, and the next year led to the next, and just trying to keep the thing going in the right direction.
Yeah, I think Mike is absolutely right there. You know, the class 2018, I think, is a class that, you know, I know Coach Warren has talked about, you know, kind of ad nauseum, and I think it's correct for him to talk about that group, because it's a group that certainly, you know, wanted to make some changes to the way things were happening. You know, the way 2016, 2017 ended for them was not what they wanted, and those guys made a commitment to each other and to the team. And I think they've kind of laid a foundation for how, you know, each senior class should almost operate moving ahead, and how, you know, the program wants to go moving ahead. And, you know, we still do a lot of stuff now that, you know, that 2018 group kind of came up with, you know, to build relationships with our program and stuff. And, you know, that's a special group, I think, for our program. A bunch of those guys actually came down for a game a few weeks ago, and, you know, a few of them even came out to practice on Friday, and it's just like, you know, they never left. And you can see the bond those guys have with Coach Warren as well, because that's technically his first, you know, recruiting class, you know, at Georgetown. So I think that group certainly has laid the foundation for kind of some of the success, like you mentioned there, Pete, that, you know, how things have kind of turned around here moving ahead. I give that group a ton of credit. So.
Yeah, that's great. That's great to hear. I would add that, and we kind of covered this, but David, you're responsible for two of the best goalies in the country now in your tenure at Georgetown. Mike, you're responsible for one of the best offenses in the country year over year now for a while since you got there immediately. So what is it that you two individually in your respective roles bring to the table that has allowed Georgetown to take a huge step forward? I know Coach Warren, I mean, I look back on his moment when you guys won the Big East, and just coming from that lack of success, and the pour out of emotion in that video clip is one of the coolest, most special things that I've seen live on a broadcast. I know the two of you have played a big part in the success, and I want to dig a little bit deeper into what that is. So I know you're two humble guys, but you're also doing substantial things at that program with your personnel. What is it that the two of you guys bring in your respective roles that has allowed you guys to be as good as you are?
Yeah, I mean, that was a cool moment, because he puts his heart and soul into everything, and it kind of just all came out, and it was building up, and it was pretty awesome just to be there. You didn't realize until you, like, watch the highlights, you're like, oh, wow, that was pretty cool.
Gives you chills.
It does. It was pretty awesome to kind of just be there, just to be a part of it. But, you know, I will say, just offensively speaking, there's been some really good players that I've been lucky enough to coach, with, like, Dan Vaccaro and Caraway and Luke Wittenberg, Craig Burge, and now, you know, with Bundy. And a lot of these guys are just really, really good. I'm just a big believer in, you know, it's not really my system that's going to be the same every year. It's, you have to find a way to put these guys in position to go be themselves and succeed. And it was, how can we get, you know, Danny Vaccaro the ball in a situation where he can get to the goal and have success? Because, you know, it's not going to be, hey, Dan, you go do this, dodge here, throw there. It's, I just felt like he's too good, and I'm doing him or any, you know, really good player a disservice if we're not allowing them to just go be themselves a little bit. And it's up to me to put them in position to take advantage of what they're really good at. And when you can have, you know, six guys out there that are good at different things and take advantage individually of every skill set that everybody has, you can kind of just sit back and hopefully that, you know, good things happen, and just constantly moving guys around to take advantage of the already good player that they are. How can I just help, you know, foster an environment for them to go have the success that I know that they're capable of having? It's not, you know, and I do think that you have to change year to year based on who your personnel is and what they're good at. You know, I would say we're different this year than maybe we were in year one. And a lot of that is because the players are good. And the players are all good. They might be good at different things. And at the end of the day, how can I, you know, develop an environment for them to go take advantage of their skill sets is the way I kind of look at it.
Let me go a little deeper on that and kind of nerd out a little bit, because I think that that's one of the reasons that people come here. So when you say a system, what exactly do you mean? Are you talking about rules and principles? Are you talking about sets and formations?
Yeah, I'm like,
what is a system?
It's I'm talking more about like sets and formations where you do the same thing and you find guys that have to go do this. And let's say you dodge down the alley, you throw to X, you get it to the backside, and you just, regardless of who your midfielders are, regardless of who your attackmen are, they have the same responsibilities or the same action that they have to do. It's trying to change that. Maybe you have an attackman like, you know, like Dan, who was, I thought, really good above the goal, which isn't, you know, now it's a little bit different where you got six guys moving around. It's maybe that he's got to play in a spot that he's never played in before, because that's just where he can have success. It's just, you know, maybe you have an inside finisher who's really good, and let's try and figure out, or let's change our offense where we can get him more shots than when we didn't have an inside finisher. So, you know, it's, I don't know if that's helping Terry answer your question. It's just that I'm not a believer in you have the same formation, same set, and whoever it is that your six guys are out there, they're doing the same thing, because every player is different, and that may not be the best setup for your team or your offense to be good.
Are you a believer in anything as like, this is what I believe leads to good offense?
Yeah, we have like principles or concepts within our offense that regardless of whatever set we're in, we want to stick to. You know, and our guys know that, but that isn't.
What are they?
We have a saying that I'm a big believer in. If every possession can end in a quality shot, I can live with it. And, you know, we're going to have some possessions where we're all over the place, where our spacing's bad, it looks like crap, and we throw the ball out of bounds. Those are the ones that annoy me. We could run great offense, and if we end, ball moves quick, and we get a good shot, if we hit the pipe or goalie makes a save or we miss a goal, I'm all right with that. And, you know, it's just sticking to that more so than, you know, getting high. It's like, all right, we ran great offense just because we scored a goal. There were times when we ran terrible offense, but maybe Jake Caraway scored from 17 yards and it ends up being a goal, but it wasn't good offense. And I'll say, like, guys, like, that's not good offense. Like, you know, and there are possessions that we've run great offense and, you know, maybe we don't score. But we'll have the principles that we have will be the same regardless of which set we're in.
David, it's Monday night. You guys just played Lehigh. You watched film today. Was there an example of bad spacing? And can you describe what it looked like? Because to me, as like a normal, when I hear spacing, it's just a word. It doesn't mean anything. So can you help me understand?
Did you ask me? Sorry, I didn't. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think there definitely is examples. You know, again, a lot of it depends kind of what the defense, I think, is giving us. You know, but there's, you know, there was a clip today that, you know, Coach P showed the offense where, you know, our spacing wasn't good. Guys were in incorrect spots. So, you know, we have guys trying to dodge to places where, you know, there's people in their way, things like that. And it honestly, actually, the funny thing is, like Michael just said, and I've watched Coach P do this now for a while. We actually ended up scoring on that possession, but it had nothing to do with really anything. We had a guy made a great play, picked up a ground ball, fed a guy, but, you know, the spacing wasn't great, I don't think. And, you know, again, to Coach P's point, I think, you know, sometimes offensively, you know, we were watching film again today and we got a great shot. It didn't go in the goal, but I actually saw Coach Phipps on the film. You can watch him clapping, being like, hey, that's good offense. The guy just made a nice save. So, you know, I think for us, you know, I think, you know, spacing, you know, there definitely was an example in the game the other day where it wasn't good, but, you know, just keeping our guys spread. Again, a lot of it has to do with, I do think, as we go week by week, just what the defense has given us, you know, and what Coach P is kind of telling the guys. But there was an example today for sure. I know it's at Coach P. I know you probably have to know exactly which one I'm talking about. So
when Declan threw it a bad pass to Whipper, he picked it up and
clean it up, guys.
Keep going.
Clean it up. So David, just on the goaltending front, you know, like what's your approach there, and what are you doing with those guys? And I know they're talented guys, like, but what are you doing specifically with them to sustain or bring out the talent in them to kind of a parallel to what Mike was saying offensively. You guys have talent, but what are you doing to showcase that and make them continue to improve?
Yeah, no, and, you know, again, you said it, both unbelievably talented goalies. You know, Nick, you know, kind of got there. Nick was a senior. You know, I think the biggest thing with Nick was just doing whatever I could to give him a lot of confidence. But I always tell, you know, when we're working with our goalies, I say it to him straight up. I go, I did not play goalie. I think it's insane what you guys do. The fact that you're going to stand in net and see a shot, you know, moving 100 miles an hour with this big rubber ball, especially on a day like today when it's freezing out, like, you guys are nuts. But either way, you know, I think over the years, you know, I've been able to learn some stuff from some other people. You know, obviously Coach Phipps's brother, Brian, you know, was certainly, you know, one of the best goalies to ever do it. And he's a good friend of mine. So, you know, I've run off a lot of ideas off him. You know, when I was at Penn State, Coach Stambroni used to work with the goalies, and I learned a lot of stuff from him. And, you know, there's a few other people in my life that I've been able to learn some stuff from that I've been able to kind of bring to Georgetown. But, you know, I think one of the biggest things is just making sure that these guys are confident. It's just such a unique position. It really is. You know, I think giving them confidence, giving them, you know, the thought that when they get in there, you know, they're going to do a great job. And, you know, hey, if they give up one, that's fine. Let's just focus on the next one. And, you know, I think just building that up. And, you know, again, I kind of coach them from a shooter's perspective of things maybe I see as a shooter, you know, versus more so everything technically as a goalie. You know, once these guys get to college, I kind of always tell them, like, there's some stuff, obviously, that maybe you can do with your hands or where your feet are or whatever, but I'm not going to, you know, make that many drastic differences because you got to college for a reason. I mean, you're a very good stopper of the ball, things like that. So what can we do kind of to fine tune that? And again, you know, just been very lucky to work with some really, really talented goalies guys. You know, Owen is someone who, you know, I've just been really proud of and impressed with, just honestly, his growth and maturity, not only in the cage, but, you know, as a leader of our team, as somebody, you know, off the field who has continued to evolve and grow. I mean, he's a fifth year for us now. And had you told me his freshman year that, you know, he'd be a fifth year, you know, for us back, and, you know, he's, you know, considered one of the leaders on our team, I think I'd say, really, that kid? Because I don't think he said a word his entire freshman year, but he's just continued to grow and evolve, and he's an awesome guy. And, you know, we work on, you know, a lot of stuff, but, you know, one of the things too we talk about a lot is clearing, because I think it's just such a underrated part of the goalie position, especially at this level. Obviously, Pete, you coached it, and, you know, Terry, obviously you watch a ton. I mean, it's a very, very, you know, big part of it is clearing, especially the amount of teams that, you know, are 10-man riding and doing that stuff now. So, you know, we work on that stuff every day if we can, just to, you know, continue to develop and evolve. But, you know, it's a unique position, there's no question about it. I just try to do the best job I can with it, you know, obviously not being a goalie myself, just trying to honestly pick the brains of a lot of other people who have done it. And honestly, I pick the brain of our guys a lot too. I really do. I think they're, you know, all of our goalies. I think Owen has taught me somewhat more than probably I've taught him over the years, but that's just, I think that's just part of the position as well. So.
Yeah, that's great clarity. And pretty awesome what you guys are doing there in terms of your philosophies. And David, you mentioned learning from your influences, and Terry mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, you guys are you know, Maryland blue bloods in terms of your upbringing. We'll call it the lacrosse cosmic lottery for right now. You guys were born and bred to be a part of this game, in some form or fashion, and that has manifested itself in two very good players and now two very good coaches. And I'm going to mention a couple guys on both in both of your families, and you guys can kind of just talk about, you know, what it was like having a stick in your hand at an early age and being influenced in a way, just like everybody in one way or another. But how has it helped you kind of pick your path in life and your career, and how's it shaped you as a person? You know, David, your father, Bob Shriver at BL, like for, I think, 36 years. Legendary Hall of Fame, you know, high school coach and just a fun guy to talk to. And then, you know, Mike, for you, I'm going to go way back. Buster Phipps, your grandfather, and Wilson, your father, both assistants at Navy. I'm just, you know, scraping the surface of what these guys did in the sport of lacrosse. But those are the two things that stuck out to me. David, can you talk a little bit about what your dad's presence in this sport of lacrosse meant to you and kind of what it did for you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously, you know, like you said, my dad was coached for a long time at Boys Latin. I certainly had no choice on where I was going to school. But, you know, literally from a young age, my dad, I can remember when I started going to BL, I wanted to be on pre-first. Every day school would end, I go over to the practice field. I'd be around those BL teams literally my entire life, you know, up through middle school. And then, you know, once I got to high school, I was able to compete and play myself, you know, on the JV team. And then, you know, obviously transition to the varsity. So my dad's had an unbelievable influence on my life. Obviously, he knows so many people in the sport that I got to meet over the years. And, you know, for me, you know, being around him every day, seeing the way he interacted with his players, seeing the way that he motivated his players has kind of, you know, made me want have that passion for the sport and then want to continue on and work in the sport kind of after college. So he's obviously, you know, been an insane influence on me. And, you know, certainly I give my mom a lot of credit as well for giving, you know, me the ability every day after school to go spend time with my dad and be around those practices and, you know, be around coaches' locker rooms and just hear some of those stories, things like that, and be around some amazing people in our sport. So, you know, I'm extremely lucky. My dad has given me so much, and, you know, he's still heavily involved. Obviously he's not coaching anymore at BL, but, you know, he's still trying to do, he does some announcing here and there. He comes to as many games as ours as possible. You know, he was the first person I saw after a game on Saturday at Lehigh. You know, I know Coach P talked to him too, as well, a little bit, and, you know, he's chiming in with some comments about the game and stuff, but, you know, he's obviously meant the world to me and, you know, is the reason, you know, I'm sitting here talking to you guys today. There's no question about it. So, he's certainly a very special influence on my life.
Yeah. Mike.
Yeah. Mine is very similar. I know my dad didn't coach for 36 years at Boys Latin or anything like that, but he coached me all growing up, and it was funny. It was, my grandfather and my dad both played at Maryland, and I like grew up my whole life. And I was like, all right, I am not going to go play at Maryland. Like, there's no way. Like, everybody says you're going to go play at Maryland. You're going to play at Maryland. I'm like, no way. I'm going to play basketball at somewhere else. Like, that basketball is what I love. And it was really just because they did it. I was like, I'm not going to do it. And then I actually quit one day in like sixth grade. And my dad was like, fine, if you don't want to play, you can walk home. We live like 2 miles away, and it was a little different world back then. I walked home, sixth grade, 2 miles. And then one of my teammates called me that night when you had to like call house phones, and he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. And I ended up just sticking with it. And, you know, the thing that my dad taught me was that he didn't care how well you played, how many goals you scored. And I know he knew a lot about lacrosse. He played lacrosse. All he cared about was your effort and how hard you played. And that's the thing that I took away the most was that. And, you know, to this day, the thing he'll say about our games is you guys played hard or you didn't play hard. Not even congrats on the win or sorry about the loss. It's really just about the effort. And that's the thing that I learned, you know, a long time ago with him coaching me, coaching my brother. Like, we used to play in the backyard, and my brother would be goalie, and he had no choice to play goalie because we were just like, you're the youngest one, you have to play goalie. We would shoot tennis balls on him, and I think it worked out because he was the slowest kid on the block.
It worked out just fine, it seems like.
Fine, yeah. He was slow. You know, he couldn't run, but he could save everything, and it worked. So just growing up, we had a ton of us out there just playing, and it started with just my dad and my mom, honestly, too. My mom was pretty athletic. She played lacrosse. It was really just unavoidable, and I'm pretty happy that I stuck with it, that's for sure.
So that's actually a nice segue to talk about recruiting, because my question is, we talked about this on a podcast earlier this week, the idea that hustle is a skill, and that effort is a skill, and it's not something that you can take for granted, but it's also not something that if you see it happen in one instance means that it's going to happen in every instance. So when you're recruiting to a place like Georgetown, obviously you have to bring in somebody who can hack it academically and socially. But once you get through those factors, you just got to, you know, fit into your culture. Then obviously, can he hack it lacrosse wise? And there are a lot of players that are athletic and skilled enough, but they don't bring the effort every day. How do you try to suss that out? How do you try to identify this is somebody who's going to be able to meet the effort required every day?
That's a good question, and it's really difficult, but it's really important. And I think the most important thing you can do with that is don't like half-ass it with recruiting by watching a kid once or twice. I think you have to watch a kid a ton. Because it is easy to play hard when things are easy. And when you know that it's the all-star game at Maverick and there's 72,000 coaches lining up the sideline, if of course a kid's going to play hard in that game. I just think that you can't, you know, watch, you got to watch a kid over and over and over again, I think, and do your homework and do your due diligence to make sure that, you know, he's going to fit in and he's going to play hard. And we're fortunate that, you know, our kids do play hard. And Coach Warren says it all the time, you know, you have to recruit the locker room first. And I think that you have to do your due diligence with that. It's really, really important, I think, to watch a kid as much as possible to get the best overall evaluation. And sometimes it's good to see a kid, maybe if he doesn't know you're there. It can give you a little different perspective and all that. I just think you have to watch them a bunch to kind of weed that out, because the last thing you want to do is be wrong about that. And then, you know, you're coaching effort and, you know, maybe a kid's not playing as hard as you hoped, and that's tough. And that's not what, you know, we don't want to coach that. So I think it happens on the front end and getting to know a kid and watching them play a bunch, if that makes sense.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think, and it's something that obviously you guys are doing at a very high level, you know, so you're recruiting a locker room. You're also getting these highly skilled, very athletic young men that, at least from an outsider's perspective at this point, if they do fit in the locker room into what you guys are doing culturally, it's going to pay huge dividends. So, you know, David, can you walk us through what specifically you're evaluating in terms of maybe a midfielder or an attackman when you're watching, or a goaltender for that matter?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously, you know, for us, we, you know, you're looking for talented players, no question about it. You know, I think Mike, you know, talked a little bit kind of about some of the effort, things like that. But, you know, you're looking, you know, I think midfield attack wise, I think we're obviously looking for some skill. But, you know, there's obviously, you know, there's some midfielders. You know, we have midfielders on our team right now, you know, that, you know, I look at guys like, you know, Will Godin, Jack Leary, you know, there are guys that, you know, in high school are playing a little bit of offense, but, you know, you're watching them play and you're maybe seeing them in a different role. Maybe they don't know it yet, but, you know, and certainly, you know, I think, you know, midfield wise, kind of watching that. I think goalie, obviously, you know, there's a lot of different things that you're watching. Again, you know, you want to see how he's saving the ball. You want to see how he's clearing the ball. You want to see how he's stepping to the ball, you know, moving, you know, how he's communicating with his teammates. Honestly, you can tell, I think, a lot about a goalie just by kind of how the way the defense responds to him, you know, certainly as well. But, you know, again, I think we leave no stone unturned. I think, and again, it goes back to kind of Michael, I think, does a really, really good job connecting with people as well. And, you know, I was kind of to piggyback on Michael's, you know, answer to Terry's question just before here. You know, I think one of the things that I know Michael does an awesome job with, Kevin does, you know, I try to certainly do it as well, is just building relationships with the high school and club coaches. You know, obviously my dad was a high school coach, as we talked about, for a long time. And, you know, building relationships with those type of coaches to hear what they say about their players, I think, is really, really important. Because, you know, hey, you might watch a kid, he might be the most talented kid you've ever seen, but, you know, if you talk to his high school coach, he's like, yeah, you want no parts of that. Well, you know, I think that's stuff you need to know. I mean, you need to hear from those people. So I think that's one of the things that, you know, I certainly commend Mike kind of as a recruiting coordinator on. He does a really good job kind of digging deeper into some of the guys. And, you know, I think that's, you know, one of the things that we try to do when we're out recruiting, trying to find guys that, you know, want to play at Georgetown.
All right. So let's move on from the part where you're trying to figure out who's good enough to play and move into the part at Georgetown and move into the part where you're trying to get them to come to your school. So I went to Calvert Hall versus Western Reserve on Friday night, and I saw three players that are going to be playing for you. One of whom you're not allowed to talk about yet. Another of whom didn't play because he's injured, which would have been the fourth. I've followed your 22 and 23 recruiting pretty closely. And so, you know, familiar with kind of the beats, so to speak, of how this went about. And obviously recruiting the 22s was super unique relative to COVID and having to do it all remotely. But with respect to the 23s, how many players did you have to bring on campus? How many families did you have to bring on campus in order to get the number of commits that you wanted, say, whenever it was that you kind of pressed pause and shifted your focus to in season? And how do you describe the way that those visits unfolded in the two-way balance of making sure that this is an opportunity for you to kind of be the final gatekeeper to being like, all right, are we going to make this kid and this family an offer? Or are we going to decide we appreciate you coming, but maybe you're not the right fit? So again, what was the process of developing the pool of guys that you wanted to bring onto campus? How big was that pool? And then how did you navigate each individual visit from the standpoint of making sure that they wanted to come if you wanted them?
I honestly, like, I don't even know. Like, it is really, it was crazy. You know, cause obviously the rules change and it's September 1 and it's, you call some kids and it's almost like you felt like September came and gone in a second. It was like, there was a visit a day. I don't know, Shrize, how you felt, but it was like, not.
Yeah, that's how I felt. That's
like, I don't even know if we figured out how to do it. It's just, you schedule visits and you try not to do two in a day, I guess, just because you want to make sure that you can spend enough time with each individual family and get to know them. And that is really important. I do think it goes back to being yourself, which we try to be. And I know Coach Warren certainly is around these families, and that's a big part of it. You know, and I think that sometimes as far as like how you take the next step, it's a gut feeling too. Just as you're walking around getting to know them, you just have to trust your gut on, is this group of people going to fit in with what we're trying to do? And are they going to fit into the locker room? And, you know, usually you can figure that out if you just build that relationship and go from there. But I don't think it's an exact science. I don't even know if we have figured it out. I'm sure every school is looking at it and doing it differently. I don't think there is the right way to do it, but it's hard. It really is hard. And you know, it's a big piece of part of everything now with the rule. It's like your month of September is just, it's wild. And it's really, really hard, but it's a thing that I like a lot. Just getting to know certain different people and going from there. But it's, we're still trying to figure it out. It's nuts.
Yeah. I think it's tough. I personally think it's just hard to balance with your own team, honestly, with your own team and stuff, and what you have going on in the fall, you know, with your current team and trying to, you know, again, you're building towards the season, you know, you're building for us this fall, we're building towards the 22 season, and, you know, trying to balance all of it. It can be tricky. Like Coach P said, you know, September is just mayhem. You know, I think just, again, it's important though to realize as well, you know, we have current teams that, you know, need to develop and get better. And, you know, I think, I still don't think we have the perfect formula for exactly how we can do that and handle the recruiting piece, but that's just kind of, you know, one thing I think that, you know, we're continuing trying to figure out as we move ahead here.
I think you got to figure out, or you got to do your best to figure out how serious a kid is about a school that you're recruiting for, because you know, there could be times when you get a call, it's, hey, coach, like, I'm going to swing by, I got 2 hours to stop by. And it's like, okay, well, it's that, how about this day where you could spend the whole day with us? And if he's not sold, it's like, well, it probably wouldn't have worked out anyway, because maybe we're 11th on the list. So it's of his world tour of visits. So you got to try and to navigate it in a way where the interest is mutual to begin with. And then, you know, you kind of go from there, but it's never ending and it's always changing. I know that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine anybody that's not willing to spend as much time as you're asking them to spend with you, specifically at Georgetown. This may be different at other institutions, but there's enough talented guys that are willing to spend however much time you're allotting them with you guys. And I would imagine that's a pretty big red flag. If a kid's like, I can only stop by for an hour to Georgetown. It's like, all right, fine. Go have fun, you know, wherever you think you're going. And best of luck to you. That would be my approach to it. But anyway, I wanted to ask you guys what you learned from last year. You get to a place where you have a ton of success. You win the Big East championship. You're on this emotional high, and you're by no means done. Or do you guys think you're going to be done? And you're looking forward to that next round. And probably there's a ton of belief in how far you can go. You end up not executing at your highest level that day. What is your opinion, or what are the learning points that you guys took from that experience, saying, hey, here's what we need to do differently throughout the year next year or years moving forward in order to hopefully have a different outcome? And you don't have a crystal ball, I understand that, but like anything that stuck out to you in terms of, man, we probably should have worked this or that into our culture or into our practices and schematically or philosophically so that we can have more success as we continue down this path as a program?
Yeah, I you know, obviously it was disappointing. There's no, you know, you hate to go out like that. And, you know, hindsight's always 20/20 when it's like, what could we have done to better prepare the team as a staff? Because it's ultimately up to us to try and get them to play their best. And, you know, I do think that there's no way you can replicate the actual environment or the actual experience. Or I know Coach Warren, he's coached in so many big games. He actually said to me, and it stuck with me, he said, the quarterfinal is a different animal. He goes, it just is, like, just mentally, you know, not to say we're shell shocked, but it's just like, you can't mimic it in practice. Just the way that you could feel. I mean, even for me, it's like you get butterflies before the game that you don't have. And it's just like, you can't replicate that in practice. And I'm just hopeful that, you know, you take the lessons learned from the experience, obviously a tough experience, but you take that and get better. So if we're fortunate enough to be in that environment again, that we learn from it and have a better outing. Cause that's ultimately the only thing you can do is take it and run and try and get better from it. Because yeah, we didn't play our best. There's no doubt about it. But you know, if you're not getting better from it, then what's the point? But I don't know if I wish I knew the answer of why we didn't play well. Obviously we take full responsibility in it, but it's, man, I hope that experience is going to help us down the road some point as a program.
Yeah, it was, you know, again, we did not put our best foot forward, and, you know, Michael said it, you know, it's certainly on us as the coaching staff. We did not prepare our guys well enough for the game, but I do think, you know, one of the things I took away from it is, you know, our guys' reaction to it. You know, our guys were upset. They were upset, and, you know, it was more of a, you know, they were pissed off at themselves and pissed off at just, you know, the way the situation went. And they did not think they put their best foot forward. And I think, you know, that's a good thing. I think, you know, they easily, our guys could have, you know, said, oh, it's still an awesome year. You know, we won the Big East. You know, it's great, but, you know, we made the quarterfinals for the first time in a long time here. But they really didn't have that mindset. And I think that's something that's encouraging, you know, to us as coaches. And, you know, it's something that I certainly, you know, appreciated, you know, seeing them moving ahead. And I think, you know, we've seen some guys respond, you know, the correct way to that. And, you know, I think Coach Warren has said it plenty in some of his interviews and stuff that he's done, you know, since then. You know, I do think, you know, we felt that, you know, Virginia kind of beat us up a little bit, you know, athletically. So I think we put a big, you know, point of emphasis in the weight room this fall and kind of this spring, weight room, kind of strength conditioning, you know, also just some of our stuff out on the field, agilities, things like that. You know, our strength coach, we have a new strength coach this year, Dustin Daly, who's done an unbelievable job. And, you know, I think that some of that stuff has also helped us. You know, we have now, we're kind of using some of that sports science stuff as well. You know, this is the first year we have those catapult units for some of our guys, which has really helped us as a staff manage some of our players and stuff. And, you know, maybe that's part of it too. Maybe, you know, looking back, maybe we didn't manage our guys' kind of legs and stuff towards the end of the season as well. You know, especially, you know, maybe that final week. So, you know, having all the data available, that's only going to help us moving ahead, I think. But, you know, certainly, you know, I think that's one of the big things that I certainly took away from it. But
is it possible that you didn't have enough Frosties on Friday before the game?
100%. I was on Long Island. I don't think there's a Wendy's within 100 miles.
You're right. I think we looked it up too. We couldn't, I don't think we could DoorDash any Frosties or anything. So that was probably the issue right there.
That's not good when you have a toddler. That's bad. That's bad news.
No.
What's about Frosty Friday? Cause I'm about to adopt that. I've been watching it for years.
Boy, sorry. I missed you. How did it come about?
Yeah. Tell us about it.
Honestly, man, I really don't know. Like, I don't remember. I think it was away on a Friday. Like I get to work early, but I leave early to pick the girls up from school. And I think it was away one time on Friday of me to get my 2-year-old into the car. And I was like, I will get you a Frosty if you just get in the car. And like, you know how it is. Exactly how it is. So I was like, I'm like, wow, she got in her car seat. So I'm like, oh, I got to get a Frosty. And it was Frosty on Friday. That's what they said. And we just took it and ran. So it's like, it's almost like it was a bribery thing that just was able for me to get them to do what I was saying, because it's mayhem with a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. So it was really just a form of bribery that took a mind of its own. I'm just a little disappointed that Wendy's has never responded to my Instagrams. I've never gotten anything. I was looking for maybe a commercial or something.
It's a great marketing campaign. I've always said that. Fantastic marketing campaign. But I don't know.
I don't know if it's weird or what, but I've always looked forward to the Frosty Fridays, like videos and pictures on Twitter. And I'm right behind you with a 2-year-old and a 6-month-old. So it's something I'm going to adopt. It's my last straw when I run into, you know, what I'm inevitably going to run into when I'm trying to put my kid in the car. So it's coming down the pike. I'll send you a video. But my favorite one was when you canceled it. It was you canceled Frosty Friday. I'm like, what a terrible day for his daughter. But that is hilarious.
Yeah, so. It was a bummer. It's happened actually quite a bit. One of them was because finally my four-year-old stole. I don't think she really understands what that even means. She took her teacher's cell phone from school, and I didn't realize that she had her teacher's cell phone until we got home. She's like, Daddy, I have this phone. What is this? I'm like, what do I do? So I drove back. School's closed. I'm like, this teacher's probably freaking out, not having her cell phone. I'm like, this is so there's no.
Man, that is incredible. So you were a reference from Mr. Kip Turner. Not that we weren't going to interview you, but I asked him who should we get on, and you guys were at the top of the list. So now we're going to pass the torch. Why don't you give us one head coach recommendation and one assistant staff recommendation that you feel like we should get on the podcast? It would be good for the listeners.
Oh, that's a good question. Head coach wise, I would say John Torpy of High Point. He's the man. I worked for him, got my first job, really paying job, really in this profession with him down at High Point. He's great. He's hilarious. I think he'd be a great guest. Assistant coach wise, I don't know if Shiraz might have an answer for it. Help you out on that one.
Yeah. But, oh man.
My pick for head coach.
Torps is a good call for sure. I was going to say head coach, Coach Corrado, who's just one of the funniest human beings. I think him and Coach Warren talk all the time, and those guys crack me up with some of their conversations. So, no, I guess I'll just turn it over because we are pretty close to the Nova staff just because of Coach Corrado. So I'll say, I think Simon and Coach Miller would be pretty funny to have on here because I think they'd have some hysterical Coach Corrado stories that I think we'd all enjoy, but that'd be my vote.
Yeah, that's what we hear like every morning. One of the reasons why I have to get to work so early so I can get my work done because the time Coach Warren gets there, he's talking to like eight people on the phone. He's BSing with Corrado and all. It's comedy hour until practice.
And in conference, man, that was I know those guys are close. I know, I mean, lacrosse is special in that way, right? Wow. Like all the coaches are close, but to recommend an in-conference rival, I really respect that. That's good stuff. Okay. Terry, you got anything?
I'm happy. I'm good. I'm ready for Friday. It's only Wednesday. This is brutal.
You got two more days, Terry.
48 hours. Unbelievable.
We'll get there.
I was hoping that the podcast was going to be at 7 so I could miss that time and when it, this peak this mayhem around the hours of 5.
If it was once a year, I'm sure I could get away with that, but I'm doing this podcast once a week. I can't tell my wife I got to miss bath time for my Inside Lacrosse podcast. She'd lose her mind. That would not be good for me. But we do appreciate you guys getting on late in the middle of the season. This was a great interview, and I'm sure our listeners will enjoy it. So we appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Great to catch up with you guys.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. Awesome catching up and talking some lacrosse. So thanks again. Let's ride.